minutes, 6 past the hour here on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition.
Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, lurking conservatives. What's up? Don't tell me. I know what's up. Are we going to talk about it? Do I care? Is it important? Probably not. Kalo, is it important? Do you want to just beat around the bush?
No, let's go into it.
Michael All right, I got nothing to go into. I mean, Michael Jackson, after 3.5 months of deliberations, of trials, of everything else, well, not deliberations, only been about a week or so of that, but after 3.5 months of a trial, was found innocent on all 10 counts in child molestation accusations. He's guilty, apparently, of nothing but being freaky. Am I right?
You're right. No.
I don't know.
Let's move on.
That's it, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I couldn't believe how much I don't care. It's not even so much I don't care. I just, it was completely disconnected from the entire event. I turned on the TV because I was told to by the voice. There was someone actually driving down the streets of Queens going, "The verdict! The verdict is out!" Wearing a little town crier outfit and a horn. I'm kidding.
Oh.
No, it didn't happen. Didn't happen. But
Queens, you never know.
That's true. That's true. But I turned it on, and I sat there and watched the front of the courthouse for about a half an hour and had that moment of, what the hell am I doing? What am I doing watching this? All right? So he's not guilty on 10 counts. Can we move on? Can we move on, Chris? Can the culture move on? It's not what we're expected to deal with here, is it?
No.
There is a moment, though, where they bully you. You know, you're coerced into thinking that it should be important, that you should be on board. I felt a pressure to be involved. So I did a little side bet with my wife. I thought he'd be at least guilty of getting the kids boozed up.
Wow.
But nothing. Nothing.
And what was the wager, my friend?
You know, the wager was nothing. It was just the thrill of being right with your spouse.
Oh, it wasn't like any kind of weird sex or anything?
No, I can do that anyways. But don't you ever have those things where it's just sort of you make a bet just so you can be right? And then as they were reading the guilty, not guilty thing, she kept looking at me, like, you know, with that look of like, you're not going to be right. You're not going to be right. And that was it. Then I moved on to get into the real news. A poll shows USA is losing patience on Iraq. A new Gallup poll finds nearly 6 in 10 Americans say the United States should withdraw some or all of its troops from Iraq. In the poll, 56% say the Iraq war wasn't worth it. Dig that. People waking up. The top reasons cited are fraudulent claims and no weapons of mass destruction found, the number of people killed and wounded, and the belief that Iraq posed no threat to the United States whatsoever. Isn't that interesting, Chris? People are starting to wake up across this country and realize that the neocon death cult has deceived them, misled them. But this is sort of sad, though.
What took them so long? That's my question.
They were frightened, and when you're frightened, you want somebody to follow. Senator Joe Biden says, though, that there's a possibility of a draft. He said that we have to face the possibility of a draft. The Army missed its recruitment goal by 75%, or 1,661 recruits. Biden says, quote, "The truth of the matter is, it is going to become a subject if, in fact, there's a 40% shortfall in recruitment. It's just a reality." This, of course, contradicting Bush's statement about not reinstating the draft. That's a Democrat saying that the draft might be reinstated. A lot of people have been thinking about it, have been worried about it, and this is a Democrat stepping up and basically saying, if I can extrapolate and revise the news a bit, I believe Joe Biden is saying the president's lying. He was a liar. He lied to us about so many things. That's what I'm saying. And now there's probably going to be a draft because he's gotten us into a quagmire. And you know what is even more intense is that some active duty officers are saying that military action in and of itself won't end the insurgency. Instead, they say the only way to end the guerrilla war is through Iraqi politics. Wow. I'm not going to place a lot of my bets on that. A process that has been crippled by divisions between Shiite Muslims, who are the majority party, and Sunni Muslims, who are a minority in Iraq, but form the base support of the insurgency. Now, this, I believe, is part of a current trend of high-ranking active military personnel mustering up the stones to speak out against the neocon death cult policy at the behest of reality, or maybe their conscience, or maybe they're just laying the groundwork for an excuse to leave. You know, I don't know. It's hard to tell. I would like to believe that it's reality. General Donald Alston, the chief U.S. military spokesman in Iraq, said last week, quote, "I think the more accurate way to approach this right now is to concede that this insurgency is not going to be settled The terrorists and the terrorism in Iraq is not going to be settled through military options or military operations. It's going to be settled in the political process. Man, that's a scary possibility. This is intense stuff because this is coming from top brass in the military saying basically that we can't win this war with troops. Lieutenant Colonel Frederick P. Wellman, who works with the task force overseeing the training of Iraqi security troops, said, quote, "We can't kill them all. When I kill one, I create three." Now, that's scary, too, because not only does this contradict completely Dick Cheney's comment that the insurgency is in its last throes, but I believe it can also be applied to the reasoning that the war has actually made us less safe. I mean, if one dead insurgent creates three more insurgents, I have to assume, man, that the same thing applies to international jihadists that are making their bones fighting against American forces in Iraq. Because that's the way it worked, you know, that's the way it worked. When Osama bin Laden was coming up, when Osama bin Laden and the group of Afghani Arabs were fighting the Russians at the behest of the Americans in Afghanistan, that is where they learned how to kill and organize. And I believe that a lot of these jihadists, you know, however they are made up or wherever they come from, that are in Iraq fighting alongside the Sunni insurgency, and many despondent and despairing, angry Iraqis are learning the same tactics from fighting against Americans. And in related stories here, some Republicans are starting to want a shift in Iraqi plans. And this is big. This is big because this, if you put this alongside of the military leaders also saying similar things, I mean, even though Cheney said that the insurgents are in their last throes, some Republicans who are no longer able to manage the lie for reasons of reality breaking through, have started to speak out. And I believe this is part, again, of a current trend of Republican legislators mustering up the stones to speak out against neocon death cult policy at the behest of their constituents and maybe, but I doubt it, their conscience. I'm talking about Representative Walter Jones, Republican from North Carolina, Senator Lindsey Graham, Representative Kurt Weldon, Senator Chuck Hagel. I mean, these guys, you know, Congressman Walter Jones is a North Carolina hardcore conservative who actually coined the phrase freedom fries to lash out at the French for opposing the Iraq invasion, said on ABC, ABC's This Week, that he would offer legislation next week, setting a timetable for the U.S. withdrawal of Iraq. And I got an email from Senator Russell Feingold's people saying that he was doing a similar thing in the Senate, putting forth a resolution to set a timetable to get people out of Iraq. Maybe we can get him on the phone sometime later in the week. We know that he likes talking to us. And this just this is, to me, very exciting news. Because you got somebody like, you know, Senator Lindsey Graham of South Carolina saying, quote, "The insurgency is alive and well. We underestimated the viability of the insurgency." And on CBS's Face the Nation, he said that the administration has, quote, "been slow to adjust when it comes to troop strength and supporting our troops." I assume that a lot of these Republicans are operating on the fact that a lot of their constituents, you know, many of whom have seen loved ones or had children, you know, go to Iraq. I mean, there's close to 2,000 American soldiers dead. There's, you know, hundreds of thousands of Iraqis dead. There's thousands of Americans injured and wounded. At some point, and I think we're hitting it, Americans who may have voted for this president, who may have believed in the war at one time, are now saying, you know, look, this is ridiculous. You know, we're not stupid. We've seen this before. This is a quagmire. You have the military saying there's no end to it on a military level. You have, we have Republican senators and congressmen saying, you know, enough is enough. This thing isn't working out. We've got to, you know, think of an exit strategy. And then you've got, you know, Bush and Cheney and Rumsfeld, who now, the neocon death cult, now have to figure out a plan because they certainly haven't had one up to this point. When we come back, we're going to get into something that CNN interrupted because Michael Jackson, if you didn't know, has been proven not guilty on all 10 charges of molesting children and feeding them alcohol to molest them and whatnot. He is still stands as, I think, accused of being freaky, peculiar, and weird, and certainly makes me uncomfortable. But as far as having sex with children, a jury did their job, deliberated, and found him not guilty. So if you don't mind, when we continue this show, we're going to talk about Guantanamo Bay and torture. Would that be okay? Would that be okay if I get that information out there? Or do you want to linger on the Michael Jackson case? Let me think about it. Next.
Join the Mornings Edition.
Right now,
call 866-303-2270.
What?
That's 866-303-2270.
You don't know until you've tried this.
Mornings Edition on Air America Radio.
Damn good.
so call us right now.
800-430-9571. 800-430-9571.
Hey, it's 20 past the hour. Mark Maron here. Mark Riley still on vacation until tomorrow. I am here, Fair America Radio's Morning Sedition program. After 3.5 months of trials and a week or so of deliberation, Michael Jackson found innocent on all 10 counts in his child molestation trial. Guilty, apparently, of nothing but being weird. Almost a week after career centricrats Joe Biden, John Edwards, and Bill Richardson distanced themselves from the passion and conviction of DNC Chair Howard Dean, he is picking up momentum in his message and his ability to be an effective fundraiser. After bringing the roof down for the 40 DNC leaders in D.C. on Saturday with his statement, quote, "We are not going to lie down in front of the Republican machine anymore," he went on to kick off the Rainbow Push Coalition's annual conference on Sunday in Chicago, during which he responded to Dick Cheney's condescending comments on Fox News, Hannity and Combs, which aired last night. If I can quote the king of the neocon death cult, quote, "I've never been able to understand his appeal." This is, he's talking about Howard Dean. "Maybe his mother loved him, but I've never met anybody who does. He's never won anything, as best I can tell." Quote, "So far, I think he's produced, he's probably helped us more than he has them." End quote. Quote, "That's not the kind of individual you want to have representing your political party." End quote. That's Dick Cheney talking about Howard Dean, because other Democrats piled on to Dean, leaving the flank open. I hold them responsible. Dean delivered this gem in response to Dick Cheney's comments. Quote, "My view is Fox News is a propaganda outlet for the Republican Party, and I don't comment on Fox News." End quote. Sweet. Thanks, Howard. Enough said on that. Now, look, last night they were about to talk about Guantanamo Bay on CNN, and Dick Cheney talked about Guantanamo on Hannity and Collins. I'll get into that in a minute. But this is what happened just as Inside Politics was about to get into the meat of some of the torture tales that we're going to be sharing with you in just a second.
He believes, in fact, these prisoners are treated well. He believes a lot of this talk about abuses, that they're actually been overdone, and that this report by Amnesty International suggesting that, in fact, Guantanamo is a gulag is not true, categorically denied by both Chairman Hunter and, of course, President Bush at a press conference a couple of weeks ago. In fact, Chairman Hunter also noted that while the Senate, a couple of different Senate committees are thinking
Ed, I'm sorry. It's Candy. I'm going to have to cut you off there. We have some breaking news out of California.
So there you go. How do you like that? They got some breaking news out of California. You know what that was. So now that is going to be the breaking news. That is going to be the news for 3 days. So we're going to be in a news vacuum because that news is going to continue to break. Commentary and speculation analysis of Michael Jackson's freakiness is going to continue. And I want you to know that what they cut to right after that interruption was a parking lot for a half hour. Sad thing about that, Kalo. Sad thing, I'm watching the parking lot. I was watching the parking lot. I rarely ever watch CNN, but, you know, I knew we were going to have to say something about this. So there I am, sitting there with my wife, watching a parking lot for a half an hour.
That's pathetic.
It's pathetic.
That is literally just so pathetic.
Take it easy. Take it easy, man. I get it.
But not only of you, but of CNN. And I can't believe millions of people actually watch this crap.
Yeah, man. Say it, Chris. Wow. Caleb, Costco Ho, getting worked up here about politics. Who knew it would happen? It's finally happened. Look at that. He's on it. On the pulse of America. All right. During his interview that aired on Hannity and Combs last night, Dick Cheney also made statements. There's a lot of statements being made about the future of Guantanamo. All right. And this is what he said. This is what Dick Cheney said. Quote, "The important thing to understand is that the people that are at Guantanamo are bad people. This is the talking point for the Republicans. They're bad people. They're all bad people. It's not true. They're not all bad people. And some of them are there. They don't even know why they're there. This is just a way they're justifying their treatment of these people. It's a value judgment that in some cases is completely, you know, unsubstantiated. Why can't I get un out? Why is that to be Okay. So, okay, so, and this is the other thing that I'd like to share with you. We talked to Eric Saar, who is a former Army translator stationed at Guantanamo Bay. He was on Morning's Edition in May and told us about interrogation practices he saw at Gitmo. Here Mark Riley is asking him about the consistency of these questionable tactics in relation to, you know, bad people and good people.
Obviously, there were some bad people among those detainees that you interacted with at Guantanamo. Did you ever get a sense that people interrogated the bad guys differently than they did maybe people who might have just gotten swept up in something and ended up being detained there?
I never got the sense that there was a difference, and that was probably one of the things that was so frustrating about the experience, because we did, in fact, know that there were a number of people there that were apprehended by suspicious means, that were turned over to us by the Northern Alliance, that we, in fact, had little or no information as to why they were there, and we were attempting to get that information, really not knowing if the detainee actually had been a farmer in Afghanistan or had been there to visit family, or if he was really affiliated with terrorism. And the fact that those tactics, and we have crossed this line as a country that says this is what we're going to do, I think it's inconsistent with our principles of justice and who we are as a nation and the values that we stand for, even as soldiers and as everyday Americans.
That was Eric Saar talking to Mark Riley and myself. Eric Saar was a former Army translator stationed at Guantanamo Bay. That was a conversation we had in May. And it's a very revealing thing that he said, that they would treat all of them in the same crappy way, no matter who they were or what they knew they did or whether they didn't know if they did anything. This is a theme that has permeated the culture of torture, the culture of torture, the systemic culture of torture that has been sort of allowed to happen by the neocon death cult in Afghanistan, in Abu Ghraib, through extraordinary renditioning. That is, CIA transport planes, subcontracted planes delivering suspects or people to other countries in order for them to be tortured in a more extreme way. And certainly some of this information coming out of Guantanamo. I mean, Dick Cheney said on Hannity and Combs last night, quote, "I mean, these are terrorists for the most part. These are people that were captured in the battlefield of Afghanistan or rounded up as part of the Al-Qaeda network." Now, important phrase to parse here are, the phrases are, "for the most part," okay, and "as part of the Al-Qaeda network." See how he leaves a hole for himself? We're going to get into how this new Time report on this detainee log assists the neocon death cult in trivializing the culture of torture that was systemic. That's coming up next.
You're listening to Morning's Edition on Air America Radio.
Be born, because more babies means more $39,000 tickets to pay down the debt.
The Majority Report on Air America Radio.
Right, yeah. 34 past the hour. Mark Maron here. It's Morning's Edition on Air America Radio. Mark Riley is out of town until tomorrow. You know what I'm saying? He'll be back.
You're a heartless individual.
I know I am, Riley. That's the ghost in the machine, Mark Riley. He'll be back tomorrow from Disneyland with some ears for me. Sometimes when you read the headlines, it can be tough to figure out just exactly what the mainstream media is saying. So luckily, of course, we've got the machine, man. We got the machine, the iNews 5000 Wi-Fi headline translator. Let's crank this baby up and feed it some headlines. From Fox News. Michael Jackson acquitted on all counts. Michael Jackson acquitted on all counts. If you didn't know that, Michael Jackson was acquitted on all counts. Translation, Jackson gets off, then is acquitted. From the Detroit Free Press, Senate belatedly makes an apology for lynchings. Senate belatedly makes an apology for lynchings. Translation, Senate belatedly makes an apology for lynchings. House needs more time to think about it. Wow. It's quiet in here. It's all right. No pressure. From the Associated Press, NASA says moon return possible in 2015. NASA says moon return possible in 2015. Translation, Republicans say their post-apocalyptic gated community will be finished by 2013. Oh, boy. Okay, well, that's it. You're out. I don't even want to talk to you anymore. I mean, what do you want, another one? How about this one? All right, let's do this one. NASA says moon return possible in 20. Notice the lack of confidence in my voice now. See, I was just diminished. It's like, NASA says says moon return possible in 2015, right? It's a completely different angle on this. Completely different angle. Translation, abundant housing found for nations homeless. Oh.
It's a lot of pressure, man. I got the writers in there looking at me.
Yeah, yeah, looking at the, you know, what they're doing is like, haha, our plan has worked. Look at Marin flounder and fail.
By the way, the only time you ever see the writers, is when a bit of theirs is about to be performed.
Yeah, I don't even know if he did work on any of those bits.
Oh,
that,
really?
That particular writer, Jim Rowe. I think he's got nothing to do in there. He's just hanging out.
No, he's supervising. That's cool.
Let's get back into this Gitmo thing. Oh, there's Ken Jones. I didn't even see Ken Jones. Ken Jones working in the corner where I couldn't see him.
Yeah.
The shame. No, everything's cool, fellas. We're going to do some news now. As you know, I'm sure because it was broadcast into your head while you were sleeping, Michael Jackson, after 3.5 months of a trial and about a week of deliberations, was found innocent on all 10 counts of molesting children. Guilty of nothing, apparently, but being freaky. You make your own decision as to whether he did it or didn't, but the jury did their work and said that he didn't, and that's that. I thought for sure he'd take a hit on the alcohol. Something. Nothing. It's not like, anything's going to go well for him again unless he puts out a new record, the Cry for Help album. What do you think? Matt? Okay. All right, look, let's get back into this. The Time Magazine article that is making a lot of news right now, they released a piece with excerpts and an article on a log. All right, now I see this as, you know, not unlike blaming underlings, all right, like Charles Grainer and Lindy England for Abu Ghraib, and blaming Newsweek for protests in the Muslim war after in the Muslim world after publishing a 2-year-old story about Korans being flushed down the toilet. That is most likely true. You know, followed by the Pentagon releasing a report that made Koran abuse in Gitmo sound like a comedy of errors, included a soldier peeing on the Koran by accident through an air vent. Time magazine has published excerpts from an 84-page secret Orcon interrogation log, detainee 063. Secret Orcon is a military acronym for a document that is supposed to remain with the organization that created it. This is detailing the interrogation of one detainee at Gitmo. He was Mohammed al-Qahtani, a follower of Osama bin Laden's, and the man believed to be the one of many believed to be the so-called 20th hijacker. He had tried to enter the U.S. in August 2001, allegedly to take part in the September 11th attacks. The log and article doesn't take into account, though this guy, you know, from all indications, is most likely a terrorist, the article itself and the way and the things that it talks about really doesn't take into account the hundreds of others that have been interrogated and tortured by Americans all around the world. And because of that, on some level, and because of the context, it trivializes the accusations of extreme treatment that has been reported previous. You know, many of these, you know, in other parts of the world, at least 108 detainees have died in U.S. custody. 45 of these deaths occurred in prisons other than Abu Ghraib, which shows that it is not an isolated problem. More than 11,000 people are currently in U.S. detention in Iraq, Afghanistan, and Guantanamo Bay. At Abu Ghraib, where we know that torture has been widespread, 70 to 90% of detainees were arrested by mistake, according to the International Red Cross. At Guantanamo, there are still as many as 6 prisoners who were arrested as minors. One prisoner was 14 years old when he was arrested. He said he was beaten regularly in his early days at Gitmo, hanged by his wrists for hours at a time, and that an interrogator pressed a burning cigarette into his arm. Now, this one's particularly heinous. And what I'm trying to illustrate here is, after this, I'm going to read some of the extractions from the detainee log and why that log was released. But in Bagram, Afghanistan, an Afghan man known only as Dilawar was beaten to death over a period of several days. His legs were beaten to the point that he could not walk or even bend his knees, and he eventually developed a blood clot in his legs that traveled to his heart, resulting in his death. During interrogations, he was unable to hold a bottle of water because he had been hung up by his wrists for several days and had lost feeling in his hands. Worst of all, U.S. military reports later show that most of the interrogators believed Mr. Dilawar was an innocent man who simply drove his taxi past the American base at the wrong time. He was 22 years old when he was killed in 2002. Now, in Time magazine, you know, what they're characterizing, you know, what they choose to characterize, I think it's important to realize that Chief Pentagon spokesman Larry DeRita told Time that the log was compiled by various various uniformed interrogators and observers on the Pentagon's Joint Task Force at Guantanamo. And it is supposed to be secret. It was supposed to, you know, only remain within the organization that created it. A Pentagon official who has seen the log describes it as, quote, kind of a kind of document that was never meant to leave Gitmo. But it did. Okay? And it's important to note that it was not referred to as a leak, which means they knew about it getting out, which means that the timing is suspect given the discussion of closing Gitmo and the torture accusations from around the world. It is another attempt at undermining the reality of the administration ignoring Geneva Conventions and engaging in a systemic secret policy of torture that encompasses detainees in Afghanistan, Abu Ghraib, and extreme renditions around the world and Gitmo. And now I'm going to read a couple of these. First, I want to create the tone, because one of the methods of torture that was apparently documented in this log was the perpetual playing of Christina Aguilera songs. Can we hit it, Chris? Great. All right. And I want to read a couple other of these tortures here. According to the log, his handlers at one point, the handlers of the terrorists or the detainee, perform a puppet show satirizing the detainee's involvement with Al-Qaeda. He is taken to a new interrogation booth, which is decorated with pictures of 9/11 victims, American flags, and red lights. He has to stand for the playing of the U.S. national anthem. His head and beard are shaved. He is returned to his original interrogation booth. A picture of a 9/11 victim is taped to his trousers. Al-Qahtani repeats that he will not talk until he is interrogated properly. This is the detainee saying, this is ridiculous. You know, are you going to torture me or what? All right, here's another thing from the log. Interrogators began telling the detainee how ungrateful and grumpy he was, that always gets me. If someone says I'm grumpy, I'll talk. In order to escalate the detainee's emotions, a mask was made from a MRE box with a smiley face on it and placed on the detainee's head for a few moments. A latex glove was inflated and labeled the sissy slap glove. The glove was touched to the detainee's face periodically. After explaining the terminology to him, the mask was placed back on the detainee's head. While wearing the mask, the team began dance instruction with the detainee. The detainee became agitated and began shouting. Wow, dance instruction and being told that you're grumpy. I mean, granted, you know, the guy's being held against his will and there are other tortures going on, but none of it documented in this as extreme as what we're hearing out of Afghanistan, out of Abu Ghraib, out of these extreme renditions where they fly detainees to other countries to beat them mercilessly because that other country is one of our business partners in torture. And to assume that what's going on in Guantanamo is only what is depicted in this log that is being excerpted in Time magazine. This is, you know, puppet shows and name-calling and dance instruction and playing Christina Aguilera is crazy. And to be honest with you, this song is bad. And it is making me want to talk about something else, but not the Michael Jackson thing. When we come back, we're going to talk to... going to talk to James Walcott in a little while about the non-Michael Jackson thing, about what happens now, why so much coverage, anything but that. Coming up next, I'm going to talk about David Duke's email list, phone list, being taken by Anthony Perkins, the head of the Family Research Council, part of the Christo-Fascist Zombie Brigade that is so involved with the government and the attack on the judicial system. And also, we got a weird thing. We got Bob Jones University's dress code, which is just a peculiar bit of business I want to share with you. So stay with us. It's 44 past the hour here on Air America Radio.
With a phone system, can f*** themselves in the mouth and eat their own waste. You know, that's what I say. So leave me alone. I'm trying to get a good take and replay it back on my touch tone pad. So can I play and get a good recording so I can hear how it sounds? I got an inconsistent mental disposition.
Next message.
Morning Sedition.
Support our troops in Iraq and Afghanistan. Operation Truth. We were there.
Paid for by Operation Truth, Incorporated.
49 past the hour. Mark Maron here. It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. I am here alone because Mark Riley's in Disney World still. He'll be back on Wednesday. That's tomorrow. Riley returns tomorrow. He might even be back now. I don't know. He might be sitting at home listening to us. Mark, you listening? Call us up,
yeah,
man. Oh, there he is. That's so weird technology, isn't it? Wow, it's creepy. It's crazy, Kalo. How you feeling, man?
I used to love the fat guy.
Oh, really? That's interesting. See, you wouldn't even know that that was recorded if I didn't just say that, would you?
I still love the fat guy.
You do?
Free gum?
How about some free gum? Can I have some free gum? Come on.
Free gum?
Anyways, we'll be broadcasting live from the Tea Lounge in Parkswell, Brooklyn, Friday, June 24th. That's not this Friday. It's the following Friday. So we're going to have a bunch of giveaways and, you know, great guests. The same has been expected from all of our live broadcasts. Last week on Friday, look at this, Chris. I got the bag of buttons here from a fan.
Oh, cool.
Anna, she gave us these buttons, a Wake Up Sheeple button, Philosopher King button, Philosopher Queens buttons. I'll be giving those out to people here in the studio.
We have some awesome, artistic fans.
We do. There's no doubt about that. Alyssa, who made me the great Dream Diary. Did you see that? It's upstairs. She made me an actual book for Dream Diaries with an embroidered butch on the cover.
Holy
dig that, my friend. I will be performing it live. Performing live at Bananas Comedy Club in Hasbrook Heights, New Jersey on Saturday, June 25th. Go to BananasComedyClub.com for ticket info. We gave away a couple of tickets at the show on Friday. Hey, for those of you who are just tuning in, here are a few highlights of what we talked about on the program. It's time for today's Morning Sedition Cliff Notes. How do you like that? Nevada Governor Kenny Gwynn will veto a ban on strip club bounties for cab drivers. The governor said, outside of the billboard ads, flyers, and commercials for strip clubs, how would tourists ever find them if a cab driver didn't suggest one? Little known fact, Governor Gwynn also works primarily for tips. For tips. Hello. Tips. The Northeast Red Tide outbreak has affected thousands of square miles, a toxic red sludge contaminating New England. Those are called Red Sox fans. Hello, it's a little baseball joke, people. Baseball joke. Christina Aguilera music was used for torture at Gitmo. Listening to Christina Aguilera finally got one of the prisoners to talk, but all he could talk about was how much better she was than Britney Spears. A local New York radio station recently played a 12-hour Christina Aguilera marathon. By the end of the day, 200 cab drivers had turned themselves in. I think that's wrong. Is it? I'm not sure. Is it wrong? I'm not positive, but I got a feeling.
You're at the line.
Yeah. I don't know. It's that one, but it got right over the line. Hey, I just wanted to bring this up just as a point of fact. A Family Research Council's executive director, Anthony Perkins, as you know, Family Research Council is one of the great, huge, Christo-fascist zombie brigade, outlets. It's, he is a huge leader in the Christo-Fascist Zombie Brigade. He was part of the momentum to try to, oust, to try to demonize the judiciary. But it comes out now that he reportedly paid former KKK Grand Wizard David Duke over $80,000 for his Who's Who of Racist America mailing list back in 1996. So if there's any sort of question as to whether or not the Christo-Fascist Zombie Brigade, no matter how many black people they parade as members, or no matter how many Latino people they parade as members, is at its core a racist organization that has evolved out of a type of Christianity that is called Dominion Christianity, which believes that the reconstruction of America, the period just before the Civil War, was the greatest period. These are people that latently would like segregation, latently believe that there should never have been an end to slavery. There is a racism as the core of the Christo-Fascist Zombie Brigade that is subliminal. But when you see a story like this, that Tony Perkins, the head of the Family Research Council, paid $80,000 to David Duke, ex-KKK Grand Wizard, for his mailing list, it reveals a little something about them. In a similar vein, we have this story. You know about Bob Jones University, right, Chris, do you? It's the evangelical college in Greenville, South Carolina,
yeah.
The one didn't allow interracial dating until 2000, the year 2000. Well, they've got a pretty strict dress code, and now it includes a ban on Abercrombie & Fitch clothes. According to the school's website, quote, Abercrombie & Fitch has shown an unusual degree of antagonism to the name of Christ and an unusual display of wickedness in their promotions. This story is kind of old. In protest, we will not allow articles displaying their logos to be worn, carried, or displayed. I heard about this Abercrombie & Fitch. The Christian boycotted them a while back.
Wait, but what did they do to Christ?
I think they might have put him in one of those shirts, you know, that say Abercrombie & Fitch on it, you know, and then put him on the cross. And that's wrong to advertise like that, to have Jesus hanging on the cross with some cargo shorts and the Abercrombie & Fitch shirt. But anyways, you know, Bob Jones University is pretty strict.
It's a great mental picture.
Oh, boy, there's people fuming, in their cars right now. Why the hell does he have to say that? There's some good Christians. I don't need this crap coming out of my radio. Today you do. I'm saying that Bob Jones University is pretty strict, and if you think that's bad, you should hear the rest of the dress code. And this is right off the website from Bob Jones dress code for men and women. It's from the student expectations section of the handbook, the dress code for men. Hair must be cut in a traditional conservative style and must not appear disheveled after a white pointy hood is removed. Sideburns should not extend past the middle of the ear. However, eyebrows are expected to meet at your protruding brow ridge. Necklaces, earrings, and bracelets are not permitted unless you are Dr. W. David Hager and you are required to wear an ankle bracelet by the anal police. Anything?
Anal.
Come on. Men are not permitted to get tattoos or have body piercings, exception for stigmata on a case-by-case basis. Because you want to leave your avenues open for that. No Abercrombie & Fitch and no FUBU until we get a straight answer about what it means. The dress code for women, tops must be long enough to cover the midriff. Dirty meat pillows must be strapped down like they did in the Old Testament. Sleeves are required, especially if you're a secret cutter. Skirts, though they be the devil's work, should extend to the bottom of the knee. No slits. Don't even ask. All dresses, skirts, pants, and shirts must be loose-fitting. Jesus didn't heal the cripples so we could see your nipples. It's a little poem there. Do you hear it, the poem? Hairstyles should be neat, orderly, and feminine. Avoid cutting-edge fads and cuts so short that they take on a masculine look. We're looking at you, women's studies majors. We're looking at you, women's studies majors. That would be the phrasing on that, properly to get a laugh. What is your problem, man? You know what I mean? It's like, what, are you just sitting there thinking about other stuff, Kalo?
I have big work to do.
Coming up next, James Walcott on the circus, on the phenomenon of the Michael Jackson trial. We got Robert Paxton, author of The Anatomy of Fascism, later in the show. And we got me. Riley will be back tomorrow. You're listening to Mark Maron. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. It's 57 past the hour. Six past the hour. It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. Come on. Hey, what happened? What are you doing? It's six past the hour here on Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. Mark Riley is on vacation. He'll be back tomorrow. Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, lurking conservatives. I did that for a reason, Chris. I did it for a reason.
I thought it was a mistake.
No mistake whatsoever, because that cow looks a little sick. Should we put him in? Should we put him into the hamburger? Yeah, come on, put him in. Mad cow disease, buddy. They found another case of mad cow disease that they're not sure of, but it seems like it's pretty good. I'm going to get into that later, because you know what's more important?
What?
Yeah. You know what's more important? I'll tell you what's more important. Michael Jackson has been acquitted. Is that the word? He's been let off. On all 10 counts, found not guilty on all 10 counts of child molestation after 3.5 month trial and circus, 7 days of deliberation. He is guilty, according to this jury, of nothing other than being weird. And I'm saying that, being weird. Is mad cow important? Not today, it's not. Michael Jackson's going to be all that's important to everybody else. Is a poll showing that the USA is losing patience on the Iraq war important? No, not today, because Michael Jackson's in the news and will be for a few days. Is it important that the military says the military action will not effectively win the war in Iraq? No, that's not important today. You know why? You know why? Because Michael Jackson's been found innocent. And we're going to have to put up with that crap for God knows how many days they can milk it. And to help me sort of speculate and parse and look at this cultural phenomenon that is the media circus surrounding the Michael Jackson trial is one of our favorite guests. You know him from his articles in Vanity Fair or his book, Attack Poodles and Other Media Mutants, Eluding of the News in a Time of Terror. Jim Walcott, what do we do now? What's the country to do now that this is over?
Well, I mean, I wonder how this is going to affect Jay Leno, because, I mean, it was so much of his nightly routine to, you know, seize upon items from the trial and then, you know, really, you know, hack and thwack.
Maybe he's just going to quit, Jim.
No, but you know what? I don't think he'll drop the jokes either, because the fact is, whatever else, Michael Jackson is truly, I mean, this trial just showed even more bizarreness going on in Neverland. So it opened up things, even though he was acquitted, that, you know, people are not going to forget. I mean, and, you know, the fact that he had, you know, copies of porn magazines there for the boys, you know. I mean,
yeah,
that's taken being a good host, you know.
Booze and porn for the kids.
Yeah, for a little too far. but, you know, I noticed yesterday watching there was not the same, I mean, of course, nothing could compare to the O.J. case, but even with the surprise, there wasn't, like, the gut indignation, you know, working people up the way it did with O.J.
No, it was a completely different thing. I mean, in terms of, I guess the O.J. case was, of course, a lot more, you know, juiced up to, you know, I'm not making a pun, because, you know, it was a murder trial. There was a, and apparently, I think a lot of people thought Michael Jackson, you know, I think there's just as many people thought he was guilty as not guilty. He's been a freak for a long time. Everybody sort of has that weird moment where they're like, I don't know, maybe he, you know, I mean, it's still, and people love to speculate about Michael Jackson. But they do it in a softer, nicer way than the O.J.
Mm-hmm.
trial.
And also with Michael Jackson, he has so bleached himself now that the racial angle did not come to the fore the way it did with O.J. So you didn't have that incredible animosity that went on.
And I think that also that the racial element of the O.J. trial was much more profound. There was much more, you know, of a charged atmosphere around racial lines. In this one, it seemed that the bulk of the people who were out front were strange, stalkery fan people with, you know, birds and T-shirts.
Well, you know, if you changed the signs, they were really no different, not much different than the people out in front of the Terri Schiavo case. It's sort of like there's like a pool of people in this country who just go from a trial to whatever the event is, and they just want to stand out in the hot sun, and I don't know what they get from waving at cameras. It's not like it makes them famous, or I mean, there's something just very pathetic about the whole, you know,
the Jacksonites, Jim.
Yeah, they're like extras. They're like unpaid extras.
Yes, in the future texts of this time, they'll be referred to as the Jacksonites, who went on to create a commune in the Midwest somewhere. It was a pretty amazing phenomenon, because over this period, not unlike many other long-lasting media circuses, there were definitely some celebrities that were, you know, created out of newscasters.
Right. Well, I think the one who benefited the most here, although she's certainly had other cases, is Nancy Grace.
Uh-huh.
Because, you know, she got her own show on CNN's Headline News, which is really quite taken off, and it's really quite. I find it a very hard show to watch. For one thing, she is so hysterical. I mean, she's
irritating.
She's
Jim,
irritating. But also, she's
grating.
On this, you know, this kind of rageaholic campaign, and she sort of works on the premise that everyone is guilty.
Yeah.
You know, and not only are they guilty, but sort of like, why should we even bother going through the process of a trial?
Well, that's good for Americans, isn't it, to just give them someone to blame and be angry at? Boy, that's terrific. That really helps things.
Yeah. I mean, she sort of takes, I mean, if you can remember the dementia of the whole Gary Condit business.
Oh, yeah.
When every former prosecutor, and I don't know where these people come from, all the blonde former prosecutors, but each night they would, like, top each other with, well, you know, I think what happened is he had somebody drug her.
Yeah.
And then the Hells Angels put her on the back of a motorcycle because, you know, Gary Condit had a lot of contacts with Hells Angels.
Yeah.
And they just went. And, of course,
they tried to one-up
each
other.
You know, you get Larry King. I don't even know what world Larry King is tuned into.
Mm-hmm.
But Larry King never stops anybody and says, well, boy, I really think you're going too far.
You're being ridiculous.
Larry King goes, do you have any comment on that? Hell's Angels. You know?
Yeah.
You know, Nancy Grace benefited. And then otherwise it was often like the usual people. I mean, there's now this again. It's sort of like you have the pool of extras. You have this pool of celebrity lawyers who go on and do these things.
Just a pack. We're talking to Jim Walcott from Vanity Fair magazine. Jim, what do you think's the next big media circus coming down the pike? I mean, first of all, before you get into that, it seems to me, if I can, that in this age, perhaps in our lifetime. Jim Walcott, there is no hope for American media to ever regain its self-respect or the respect of the people, is there?
No. it's over. Well, you know, we don't even have, you know, I mean, you and I both remember there was a time when there were these kind of sage elders who actually worried about the image of journalism,
mm-hmm.
and actually worried about things like civic responsibility,
mm-hmm.
and the national, you know, that's all gone now.
Mike Wallace is still around.
But he's 80. He's 80.
And
by the way, look at what his son has turned into.
Mm.
You watch Chris Wallace now conduct his show on Fox News on Sundays. Chris, I mean, you know, it's like the son has, like, the son is really where journalism is at now.
Isn't it horrible when it comes out of resentment against people's fathers?
Yeah.
It's all about that.
Well, we've got a president.
Exactly.
So, but you asked, like, what they'll tee up next. Clearly the thing they have teed up next is, but they don't know if this is going to play out quite as long, is where is Natalie?
Yes.
In Aruba. Because, again, there you have, the blonde, the white blonde, and you've got a mystery element.
Yeah.
So they've got that teed up, but they'll always have something going. If the Natalie thing fades, there'll be another Amber Alert. There'll be another disappearing bride.
Anything but the real news in terms of what affects the world and the people that live in it.
Well, you know, that's harder and more complicated to cover.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't draw upon the whole, well, I think so-and-so is guilty. Well, I think that, you know, the judge went too far in his ruling today.
Yeah.
They love setting these up. I mean, the irony is, and I could be wrong about this, but my sense is that, in fact, most of the cable news outfits, their ratings are actually going down. They're actually losing viewership.
Yes. Well, you can only show a half an hour of a parking lot and expect people to be suspenseful for so many times.
Oh, right. Well, and yesterday, of course, we got the black vehicle heading back to Neverland.
Yeah.
You know, we now get these like 30-minute helicopter tracking shots.
Yeah. People just sitting home speculating, like, what's going on in that car?
Yeah, is it going to pull over to that 7-Eleven?
Yeah, he's getting a soda.
He's getting a soda. No, so it's like they've got their own, like, sort of motifs of tedium.
Oh, motifs of tedium. I'm writing that down. Jim, we got to split.
Okay.
Motifs of tedium. That's a keeper. Jim Walcott, thanks a lot. It's always great talking to you.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye. Jim Walcott, contributing editor of Vanity Fair. His book, Attack Poodles and Other Media Mutants, The Looting of the News in a Time of Terror, available in paperback. When we come back, we're going to talk about some of the news you're missing today because of Michael Jackson. A little later after that, author Robert Paxton's Anatomy of Fascism. I want to get him to take a look at the Bush administration. All that coming up next. I'm Mark Maron. It's Morning Sedition. Riley's on vacation. You're listening to Air America Radio at 16 past the hour.
Morning Sedition.
Just wake up.
Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
I've heard about those people.
On Air America Radio.
Thanks.
1984. That's 444-1984. 1-800-444-1984.
Past the hour, Mark Maron. Mark Riley is on vacation. We'll be back tomorrow. You're listening to Air America. It's Morning Sedition. We're getting into it. But right now, can I take a minute? I got to tell you about something we're doing here at Air America. We're helping the Boys and Girls Clubs of America raise money for low-income black and Latino kids from the Bronx, ages 6 to 12, to attend summer camp for a week. For the next 4 weeks, we'll talk with experts, kids, and camp leaders about the challenges poor kids face in the city in the summertime, such as crime, health risks, and lack of safe, constructive, organized activities. We'll also talk about how camp can help give kids a boost in their lives by building self-esteem, teaching new skills, and exposing kids to new experiences. At the end of 4 weeks, we'll know just how many kids will get to have a potentially life-changing experience this summer. Now, why are we doing this? Well, it should be pretty clear. We want to walk the walk here. We've been talking the talk for a year now, and now we're going to demonstrate the difference between us and right-wing radio. While they help Tom DeLay's legal defense fund, we're working to make a real positive difference in these kids' lives. The camp is operated by Bronx chapters of the Boys and Girls Club of America, serving areas that have the city's highest rates of teen pregnancy and HIV, and in which leading causes of death for minors is homicide. The average gross income of families in these neighborhoods served is about $14,000. The camp is located on a lakefront in Harriman State Park, 40 miles north of New York City. It's beautiful up there. I've been up there myself. Activities include swimming, fishing, hiking, boating, arts and crafts, reading and writing, gardening, computer training, and the performing arts. Go to go to airamericaradio.com, if you would, right now, and click on the Camp Air America link. Then you can make your tax-deductible donation online or by phone. $35 sponsors a morning hike for 15 kids. $35. What's that? The movies for a person these days? $75 sponsors an afternoon of camp activities for 30 kids. $75. $350 sponsors an entire week at camp for one of these kids. $350. Then drop us an email, if you want, at sedition@airamericaradio.com and let us know how much you donated and why. Maybe share a story about camp with us. I mean, camp certainly changed my life. I was forced to go to camp primarily because my parents didn't want me in the house in the summer, literally. My mother would say, there's no way you're staying. One time she made me stay at camp for 2 terms because she didn't want me to come home. Now, I'm not complaining. I was grateful that they had the dough to send me to camp. And I learned a lot of great things at camp, some of those things I can't even talk about, the secret camp things. But if you could do that, just go to airamericaradio.com and click on the Camp Air America link, and you can make a tax-deductible donation online by phone. As I said, $35 will sponsor a hike for 15 kids. $75 sponsors an afternoon of camp activities for 30 kids. $350, an entire week at camp for one of these kids could change his life, could save his life. So why not be part of that? So I know the Michael Jackson thing has got, is taking up the entire collective unconscious right now. Michael Jackson was found innocent on all 10 counts of child molestation. And I guess he's not guilty of anything but being weird. That just happened. That was after 3.5 months of a circus that I barely watched. It's weird. I just didn't watch any of it, Chris. I did not watch any of it. But yesterday, because I was told the verdict was coming down, half hour I watched the front of that courthouse. For a half hour, just sitting there going, oh, man, making some side bets with my wife. But that's what's really important right now. And not the mad cow case that they've just found in the United States, that they're trying to figure out whether it's truly a case of mad cow. This is baffling to me, the way the government and the meat industry is dancing around this. Dancing around it. They found a cow that they tested in November for mad cow, and he came up positive. Weren't sure if it was positive, though. Didn't kill the cow. Didn't integrate it into the meat. Now, this is a meat cow. This isn't a dairy cow. The last one that was found was a dairy cow that apparently came from Canada. So that enabled people to go, well, it's a dairy cow. Thank God we caught him. Damn Canadians. All right? But now we got a cow that they say might be positive for mad cow. Again, didn't enter the herd. Was one of these downer cows that they said, looked bad. So they didn't chop him up. But they knew he would tested positive, months ago. And now they killed him and they're taking parts of his brain. They're sending it to England to see if it's for sure. So that's going to be a 2-week process. Meanwhile, Agriculture Secretary Mike Johann said, quote, this is a situation where the firewalls worked. We do not have a human health risk. The animal did not enter the food chain. The animal never got near the food or feed chain. Okay? And he said, and then he went on to say this. Of course, he was a meat industry. Johann was a former governor of Nebraska, big beef industry place. The USDA decided to take additional tests. But what I'm saying here is that there's a lot of obfuscation. Even with this story that's sitting in front of me, it's confusing. It was tested positive once. Why wasn't it killed then? Now it's being shipped away. How many other cases are there? How safe is the food chain? Now we've got to wait 2 weeks to find out. Are there other cats? Are there other cows? I mean, this is a corporation, a very powerful lobby, the meat lobby. Millions of dollars. All right, the USDA, they're Republican Party stooges, the meat industry, Republican Party stooges, the FDA. I mean, all these organizations can no longer be trusted to safeguard our meat, our food, our environment, any of it. And now they're trying to tell us, like, it's okay. Stocks dropped for Tyson Foods, the world's largest beef packer. McDonald's core dropped. Japan still doesn't want to buy our meat because of this. Is it safe? That's the big question. Is it safe? You know, and I just want to give a heads up to people living in D.C., Florida, Georgia, Maryland, Massachusetts, New Jersey, New York, North Carolina, Pennsylvania, South Carolina, Texas, Virginia, West Virginia, that Murray's, as we're called, all jumbo beef patties, the 2.416-pound box because of E. coli. How do you like that? Is it safe? Why not give us some real information? We're grown-ups. We can handle it. It might scare us, but, you know, in Mad Cow, you might not know you get that for 20 years. That's why they're not telling us, because it looks like dementia.
But, hey, Michael Jackson's free, so.
Oh, yeah, yeah. We'll talk about that more later. We're going to talk to Robert O. Paxton about the anatomy of fascism coming up next on Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Jacob Marshall, our ambassador to the blogosphere, next time on Drankin
on Air America Radio.
Past the hour. It's Mark Maron here. It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. Mark Riley is on vacation.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he's in Disney World until tomorrow. He might be back today. I don't know. I've been reading this book, though, The Anatomy of Fascism by Robert O. Paxton. I want to share with you a little bit of a paragraph from here. Fascism rested not upon the truth of its doctrine, but upon the leader's mystical union with the historic destiny of his people. The fascist leader wanted to bring his people into a higher realm of politics that they would experience sensually, the warmth of belonging to a race now fully aware of its identity, historic destiny and power, the excitement of participating in a vast collective enterprise, the gratification of submerging oneself in a wave of shared feelings and of sacrificing one's petty concerns for the group's good, and the thrill of domination. He was talking about fascist Germany, but I want to talk to him about how it applies to what we're dealing with here in America. Good morning, Robert Paxton.
Good morning.
I'm very happy you're here. I'm trying to learn from your book. It's a very exciting intellectual experience to read your book. Now, you talk about how the word fascist, is tossed around a lot and maybe misused. Could you explain that to me a little?
Well, yeah. I wrote my book partly to try to keep the term fascism being tossed around loosely, but to use it precisely,
mm-hmm.
because in my own lifetime I've seen practically everybody called fascists. The activist left in the 1960s was denounced as fascist, and FDR was denounced as fascist. If it's bad, it's fascist, and it gets very loose.
Now, but I use it primarily in relation to this administration's pandering to the religious right. I call them the Christo-fascist zombie brigade, because I feel that the intrusion of the type of religion that they're promoting seems to have a lot of the qualities of fascism that you talk about in your book.
Well, what worries me is the abandonment of civil liberties because we're in an emergency.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a real parallel. I mean, I don't think this administration is fascist yet. I think it's a business oligarchy, and in the real fascist regimes, the businesses they liked the weakening of the labor unions, but they were subjected to the rearmament plans of the state, and they didn't like that. But then in this administration, the business gets what it wants, so that's not really quite the same thing. But some of their techniques of crowd appeal really come close.
Like what?
Well, they say, okay, we've been attacked, we're in an emergency, and we can't have the luxury of due process and the protection of individual rights. And that was exactly what the fascists said. You know, they had an important building
mm-hmm.
destroyed, the German Parliament building, the Reichstag was burned mm-hmm. down at the end of February 1933. Hitler had been in power not quite a month, and they arrested a young kid inside, a Dutch kid who had been involved with the Communist Party. That did the
communists. They used him as an example?
They said, well, the Communist rising has begun, and the next morning there was a decree
right.
suspending all liberties. It went much further than the Patriot Act, but it's the same logic. We're under attack. We can't have this softness. We've got to be hard and tough.
What is the role of the media in a fascist government, historically?
They're completely under control. there are no independent media in a fascist government.
But if this is a business oligarchy, as you said, and that is the form of government that is operating, so the media is under control by that ideology.
Well, the big media are. You can still have the Nation. You can still have, they're independent. There is some independent media. They struggle for a place.
What about propaganda?
Well, the propaganda is run by the state.
Mm-hmm.
And
so it's a little different.
The power is a good bit more centralized. We're not there yet, and I hope we don't get there.
Well, let's say hypothetically, Mr. Paxton, that the religious right, in their intrusion into the business of politics, in their desire to create a theocracy, in their way of handling propaganda and bringing people into the community of what is a bastardized Christianity, doesn't that seem fascistic to you?
Well, actually, the first fascists were atheists or agnostics, but they kind of conned the churches. I'll tell you what will be the signal to me if at the end of the presidential term they say, you know, we're in an emergency and we can't change. Now, these regimes were dictatorships. These guys were in for life. When you have, if that happens, if we skip an election,
yeah,
the president stays in because we're in an emergency.
What about
then
this?
Then we got it.
Let's talk about the symbolic use of creating sort of national mythic narratives.
Yeah.
Talk about the sense of nationalism that is fairly common in fascistic, historically fascist.
Nationalism is the base of it. It's
mm-hmm.
part of it.
So a type of patriotism that is belligerent and isolating is a symptom of fascism.
Yeah, that's a kind of fascist appeal, and dissent from it is treason. That's a type of fascist appeal.
Now tell me a little bit about. I've got this this idea that the way the religious right and the way this administration and pandering to the religious right sort of uses the unborn as a symbol of the future. It seems to me to have some sort of fascist overtones in using that and mythologizing that in the same way that they mythologize the Aryan ideal.
Maybe. I guess I'm concentrating more on on business than on the religious right. I mean, I think the religious right is pretty scary, but it's one voice among a lot. I mean, it's 25% of the population.
Well, I guess for me, just because of the way they are become so efficient at propaganda,
yeah,
and at grassroots organizing, and at the way that they bring people into this community with a fairly distinct agenda to put a religious face on everything, that it has those undertones to me.
Yeah. Well, the fascist regime certainly made abortion illegal. The unborn and the increased birth rate, that was extremely important for them.
Mm-hmm.
That's definitely a common issue.
Do you think it's beyond an administration in terms of perhaps this one, but do you think it's beyond them to create a crisis? As you were saying, that your concern is that there will be another catastrophic event that will mobilize the fear into a type of malignant nationalism. Do you think that it is there a historical precedent that those things have been caused in secret by the governing powers?
Well, sure, that can happen. I wouldn't be a bit surprised if our invasion of Iraq was motivated partly by electoral considerations.
Mm-hmm.
You get the troops involved, and then people vote for the incumbent. These guys are very intelligent. I don't.
A lot of people believe that 9/11 was orchestrated.
Well, it was used. I think it's very much like the Reichstag fire. They
mm-hmm.
grabbed it and ran with it.
Mm-hmm.
But the Iraq thing, they clearly chose to do. And then I racked my brains for some rational reason. And the most rational reason is this logic. You get the troops involved, and then everybody says, oh, we've got to vote for the incumbent. We can't change horses in midstream. We can't.
Right.
That's brilliant, and I think that's probably what they did, and that they would come up with something before the next election wouldn't surprise me enormously.
Wow, that's frightening. Well, thank you for joining us, Robert O. Paxton. The book is The Anatomy of Fascism. I really appreciate you being here.
Okay.
You take care.
Bye-bye.
It's funny, because in my head, the way I address some of the politics as he's talking about. He's a professor, and he was, you know, parsing his words in a very specific way, was that it seems to me when I read this book, The Anatomy of Fascism, which is a dense book, it's an intellectual approach to the history of fascism, you know, based primarily on the Italian model and the German model. But it seems to me that, you know, outside of what he's calling a business oligarchy, I believe that the political movement and the movement of the extreme Christian right in its movement into politics reeks of fascism. There are definitely some points there that I think are shared with some of the stuff in Mr. Paxton's book. And as he said, that the climate of fear that is created on purpose to mobilize political movements, and also the way that nationalism plays into it, reeks of a certain amount of fascist tactics. When we come back, well, I'll be sitting here by myself. Mark Riley's coming back tomorrow. We're going to have, Cardinal Milfington is going to come out here, and we're going to do the liberal confessional that usually Riley and I do, but we're going to do it with the Cardinal. So if you've got a sin on your mind, 866-303-2270 is our number. We are going to, hear your sins. So why don't you get ready to call. Think if you have any transgressions within your heart and soul against the liberal way. Please call 866-303-2270. We'll get into the liberal confessional when we come when we return. Also, we got some other stuff. We got Mad Cow, Red Tide. Oh wait, that or Guantanamo. Wait, that's not important. Michael Jackson. 44 past the hour. Air America Radio. I'm Mark Maron. You're listening to Morning Sedition.
Call us at 866.
Ha, that's awesome. Go on.
303.
Wow, yes, yes, I love it.
2270.
Oh, yeah, drop the bomb. Drop it. There's not a dry eye in the house. Keep going.
That's 866-303-2270.
Okay, well, just so you know, it was good, but I was also being pretty generous.
This is Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
That's cabinet refacing from Sears Home Services. 1-800-828-1200. That's 1-800-828-1200. 1200.
Past the hour, it's Mark Maron. The show is Morning Sedition. It's Air America Radio. Mark Riley on vacation until tomorrow. We're heading towards the liberal confessional in a few minutes. 866-303-2270 is our number if you want to confess something, some transgression you might be hiding that might be stuck in your soul's craw. We'll be broadcasting live from the Tea Lounge at Park Slope a week from Friday, June 24th. I know it's a long ways away in some respects, but plan ahead, people. I will be performing live at Bananas Comedy Club in Hasbrook Heights, New Jersey on Saturday, June 25th. Go to bananascomedyclub.com for tickets. You can drop us an email anytime you want at sedition@airamericaradio.com. Coming up on this very show, Kate Edwards, daughter of John Edwards and Justin Rockefeller, son of John of Jay Rockefeller, are going to stop by to talk about this new group, Generation Engage, which aims to get young people more involved in politics. That would be a good thing, wouldn't it? And, of course, as some of you might have heard, apparently there's some news out of California. But that's, is that important? Of course it is, right? It's the most important thing ever in all of time, Michael Jackson. Found innocent on 10 counts of child molestation. Guilty of nothing, apparently, but being strange, freaky, bizarre. Perhaps guilty, but not according to this jury. The one thing that people should really ask, the one story you're never going to get in the next 3 days as this circus, rolls up its tent. That could take anywhere from 2 to 3 days, maybe a week, depending on if something weird happens. Is just how much this cost California taxpayers. Was the ticket to the show worth it? Millions and millions of dollars of taxpayer money spent on erecting this circus tent and putting this circus on. Was it worth it? I missed almost all of it. But I got to admit, somewhere in my head, I've decided the guy was, capable of that. The guy was peculiar. His arrogance led him to allow himself to behave certainly inappropriately with young people. That's that. Yeah, the jury has said not guilty on all 10 counts, but that is, of course, the most important thing on the planet right now, not the fact that polls show the United States citizens are losing patience in Iraq, with Iraq, with the Iraq War. Not the point that some military officers are saying that it's an unwinnable war. Not the point that, you know, there's mad cow in the United States. Not the point that there's a ground beef recall because of E. coli. I don't have to worry about this anymore. That's an amazing thing, is that because I'm not eating meat, but maybe you never know with that mad cow. It could take years for it to get in. I do want to bring this up. I don't want to get too dour, you know, even though, you know, I'm going to avoid the most important news of the day. Jury selection begins Monday. This is an important trial. In Monday, in a 41-year-old civil rights case, this is in Philadelphia, Mississippi, the 1964 civil rights case of the killing of Andrew Schwerner and Michael Goodman and James Chaney, who were there to mobilize participate in the voter drive on June 21st, 1964. These guys were heading down a Mississippi back road to investigate a church that had been burned down. It was going to be a school. The FBI said that the Ku Klux Klan had beaten several church members and then set the church on fire. And before these three men reached that church, police arrested them for speeding and tossed them into the Neshoba County Jail. Prosecutors say that while the three were sitting in jail, about 20 Klan members put this plan in motion to kill them. Authorities accused this part-time Baptist preacher, Edgar Ray Killen, of leading this effort to kill these kids. Hours later, the police released the civil rights workers who drove away in a station wagon. If you saw the movie Mississippi Burning, it talks about this. And right behind them were two carloads of Klan members. After the chase, this mob of Klan members forced them off the road, grabbed them from their car, and shot them dead at a close range. And the men used a bulldozer to bury the bodies in a dam. And after a 44-day search, FBI agents dug the bodies up from 15 feet of dirt. The state never charged anyone with the murder, and federal statutes against murder did not exist at the time, which I didn't know. Federal statutes against murder didn't exist. It was the state's job. Instead, the federal government tried them, 18 men, including Killen, on charges of conspiring to violate the civil rights of the victims. They killed them. I'd say that's definitely violating the civil rights of the victims. Seven were convicted and served prison sentences of no more than 6 years. Eight were acquitted. During the 1967 trial, a former KKK guy, James Jordan, testified that Killen told the men involved that the deputies, quote, had three of the civil rights workers locked up. We had to hurry and get there, and we were to pick them up and tear their butts up, end quote. Killen walked. He walked after an all-white jury deadlocked 11-1 in favor of conviction. The lone holdout was this woman said she could never convict a preacher. So Killen is now 80 years old. He's going up on trial again. He's going to spend the rest of his life in jail. If you watch Mississippi Burning, which I've seen twice in the last few days, you know, it's devastating that that this kind of stuff existed in this country and still exists in some respects, either literally or metaphorically in this country to this day. Wow, it feels kind of heavy. It's kind of heavy. Huh? Yeah, so that trial is opening up. That's an important trial. Sometimes, you know, it's not easy being a liberal. We all stray from the straight and narrow from time to time. But when we need to unburden ourselves, we can always confess our liberal sins. If you want to take a turn in the liberal confessional, give us a call at 866-303-2270. But right now it's my turn. Bless me, Cardinal Milfington, for I've sinned, my friend.
Lift up your eyes, blasphemer, from the dank pits of Gehenna Hayab. Bring forth to me your embarrassingly shameful confession.
Well, you know, I've been reading that story about Gitmo and the treatment of the prisoners.
Yes, shameful.
Yeah, I know, but there's that one part where they talk about the puppet show performed for the detainee. Remember that? The interrogators performed a puppet show to insult him for his involvement with Al-Qaeda? I mean, I thought that part was kind of...
blasphemous, horrific, satanic.
No, I thought it was, I don't know, kind of creative, maybe a little funny.
You have a very edgy sense of humor.
Well, I know I do. I mean, I should feel really bad because the puppet show, in the context of all the other torture, is, I'm sure, just as horrifying to the detainee as the other torture. But, you know, it's a puppet show, right? I mean, a puppet show about Al-Qaeda, I mean, I don't know, it sounds funny to me. Am I wrong?
Yes. Well, actually, that is kind of funny, but... By trivializing the torture, you're playing into the Bush administration's hands, Mark. That's how they want you to feel, you tool. You'll be laughing your way to hell.
What, are they going to have a puppet show there?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But it will be you dancing over the fiery pits of Balaam, funny man. Here is your penance.
All right, well, hit me, Cardinal Milfington. What's my penance?
To distinguish torture from entertainment, I want you to sit down at the computer, log on to the Air America Radio Show archive, and I want you to listen to the Majority Report, but only the ones that Sam Cedar hosted by himself.
Oh, my God, that's inhuman. I can't do it, man.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
That's your penance. Now take your calls, monkey boy.
Amen. I thank you, Cardinal Milfington. Now, if anyone else out there wants to confess and seek absolution in our liberal confessional, you can call us right now at 866-303-2270. That's 866-303-2270. Now, Cardinal, you're going to hang out and help me dole out the penance to these folks?
I'll be here.
Have you had any experience with this, with doling out penance?
Anything that's a Catholic thing, but as a Southern Baptist, I can adapt.
All right, 866-303-2270 is our number. If you'd like to confess your liberal sins, we will be here waiting for you, me and the Cardinal here. You can take your hat off, relax a little bit, and sit down for Craig.
How about my pants?
Cardinal. Yeah, well, I don't know about the pants. Leave the pants on.
All right, I'll leave them on.
All right, confessions coming up. Stay with us. Next on Air America Radio, Mark Maron. Riley will be back tomorrow. This is Morning Sedition. It's 57 past the hour. Six past the hour, it's Mark Maron here. It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. Mark Riley will be back tomorrow. We're taking your liberal confessions here. What is it, 866-303-2270. Also, you know, I'll tell you, we've been talking a lot of stuff today. We've been talking a lot about polls showing that the USA is losing patience with the Iraq war. We're talking about how some active military are actually, the military officers saying that the military action will not stop the insurgency. We've been talking about Republicans shifting their views on Iraq. We're talking about Guantanamo Bay, and the issues that revolving around detainees there. And let's see, like, if you're watching CNN yesterday, they were covering Guantanamo Bay. But then, can we hear that, Chris?
This report by Amnesty International suggesting that, in fact, Guantanamo is a gulag is not true, categorically denied by both Chairman Hunter and, of course, President Bush at a press conference a couple of weeks ago. In fact, Chairman Hunter also noted that while the Senate, uh-huh, a couple of different Senate committees are thinking
Ed, I'm sorry, it's Candy. I'm going to have to cut you off there. We have some breaking news out of California.
Yeah, I wonder what that would have been. Breaking news out of California. You know, I don't, and that's what's going to be the news for the next 2 days. So we're going to get back to covering some of the stuff that you're not going to be hearing on CNN in just a few minutes, because the Michael Jackson parade will continue. He has been found innocent on all 10 counts in his child molestation trial. He stands accused and guilty of being really weird and freaky, and I'm done with it. I missed all of it, but I did find myself, you know, compelled to watch in front of the courthouse for a half an hour. But now let's take some confessions. Are you ready, Cardinal Milfington? Cardinal Milfington is here with me.
Yes.
Michael, streaming in South Carolina, what is your sin, Michael?
My sin?
Yes.
My sin is I was waiting for Democracy Now on TV.
Yeah.
And it wasn't there.
Uh-huh.
And so I had to turn on CNN.
Right.
And I got hooked.
Oh!
I got hooked.
I did too, man.
I got hooked.
Oh.
And
you feel dirty?
Oh, God. I had to take a shower. I had to take a shower. I mean, it's like...
You got wrangled in.
And the way they played it...
Mm-hmm.
Count number one.
I know, and you just sat there the whole time. They had you, didn't they?
It's like, count number two.
Okay.
It's like, so, oh.
Wow. Are you
sure?
What are you doing?
God.
What are you doing?
It's like,
I know. Yeah, it's starting to sound like a sin now, what you're doing right now. But, Michael... what's his penance? I think Michael has got to, you know, only from here on out, it sounds like his TV choices are okay, but he got roped in. I think he's going to be he can only watch hearings on C-SPAN, I think, now from here on out. if there's any court that you need to do. Also, you know what? I think that you need to go buy a Michael Jackson album.
I don't think so.
I know.
I don't think so.
All right, I think that from now on you're...
Can I give you another one?
Oh, boy. All right. What do you got?
I was watching so much liberal television.
Liberal television? What is that?
MSNBC. I almost got roped into giving into the legal defense fund for Guantanamo Bay.
What does that mean?
You're babbling.
I think he's a secret conservative.
That would be a sarcasm.
No. Oh, that was pretty good. Pretty good. Thank you very much, Michael. So there you go. You've gotten your sentence. He's got to. He's gotten his penance. He's got to watch hearings only on C-SPAN now. A little peculiar. I think we just got the tip of the iceberg with Michael's problems. I don't feel that comfortable with the penance I gave him. But I think let's take another call. George, listening to WLIV in New York City. What's your confession?
Yes.
What's your sin?
Let me, please. I have sin.
Yes.
Let me put on my innocent Andy voice.
Okay.
Okay. Martha, I have sin. Martha, I don't believe in y'all no more. And I don't believe Jesus is white. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Martha, y'all messing up the planet. Y'all want money and the planet natural. Y'all want something different than what the earth gave us. I don't know. Seems like for the past 500 years, we've been catching hell. I'm sorry.
Well, thank you, George. I
know what your penance is. Listen to D.L. Hughley for a week and a half. I think. How about that?
I tell you, one part of the penance is I certainly never want to be talked to in that tone again. That was very uncomfortable. I think that your penance. What do you think his penance should be? I think maybe
the 10-3 Jay Leno monologues in a row, and then have to submit jokes to him afterwards.
Yeah, the weird thing is that he's right. There are plenty of rich white people who are owners of corporations that are plundering and destroying the planet. I'm disillusioned myself. I'll tell you what. I think that what we should do, George, is that we should get a bunch of us together and leave. Are you ready to go to the moon?
I'm ready to go back to Africa myself. Give me some money.
All right.
Give me some money. I'm on my way home.
Okay. Well, we'll try and get. You know, we're doing this thing for the Bronx Boys Club. Maybe we can go ahead and put you up there. Also, we can send you back to Africa if you'd like to go.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, that seems like that worked out. Thanks, George. I appreciate your call.
George is great. He needs his own show.
He was great. The whole thing made me uncomfortable, but I'm going to deal with it. David, listening to Sirius in Virginia, what is your sin, sir?
Hey, Mark. Hey, Cardinal.
Hey, how are you, man?
Hey, this is really bad.
Oh, boy.
I'm a progressive activist, and I speak out against Walmart every chance I get.
Uh-huh.
And I just realized that last year I spent $13,500 there.
Oh, my God. $13,500 you spent at Walmart?
At Walmart, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Man, that's not even including cash purchases. That's like, debit card stuff.
Well, here's a couple of things that you got to have to do. First, are there any sort of local businesses that exist anymore in your area?
Not hardly anymore, man. Walmart's just driven them all out of business.
Well, you're going to have to travel to the nearest town, go into whatever mom-and-pop store there is, even if it's just a muffin shop, and spend $13,000.
Wow. Well, on muffins, I could do that.
Okay, on muffins and maybe some tools. Maybe if you can find a tool place. Just you gotta help the people. I mean, where I live in Queens, there's a health food store there that's run by a cult, and I shop there sometimes over Whole Foods, and Whole Foods isn't even that bad, but I just for some reason it feels more personal to deal with. You go to Walmart, that's horrible, and they treat people badly.
Well, it is, and I know that, and I preach against them, but...
All right, so I say maybe half of the $13,000 goes to $6,000 worth of muffins baked by a local business owner, and the other half I want you to send to our Camp Air America Fund to put a bunch of kids from the Bronx in camp. What do you say?
Okay, you got it.
Thanks, man. Thanks.
Thanks.
Okay, you take care. That was David. I think we helped him.
$13,000, that's a lot of Viagra.
Yeah, that we're going to help some. These kids are going to go to camp this year. I want you to go to Air America. Go to AirAmericaRadio.com and click on the link for Camp Air America. If you donate $35, you can sponsor a morning hike for 15 kids. And $75 will sponsor an afternoon of camp activities for 30 kids. $350 will sponsor 1 week at camp for a child. So I get involved with that. It's a good cause. AirAmericaRadio.com and click on Camp Air America. Cardinal, thank you for helping me out.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Very interesting segment.
Your pleasure.
No, you're a pleasure. Why are we being so diplomatic? It's unbelievable. Coming up in a few minutes, Kate Edwards and Justin Rockefeller. I'm sure that George would certainly have a problem with the grandfathers of these, Mr. Rockefeller. But nonetheless, we are going to talk to them about getting the youth engaged in the democratic process. That's coming up next, 15 past the hour, Air America Radio.
Hi, this is Mark Maron's mom, and you're listening to my son and his friend Mark Riley. They're very good boys. It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
243-1483. That's 1-800-243-1483. Call Stop Sign right now. 1-800-243-1483.
Twenty past the hour, Mark Maron here, Mark Riley, on vacation, still in Disney World, perhaps coming back today. I know he'll be sitting in that chair across from me that's empty right now tomorrow.
What?
Yeah, exactly. I love those buttons.
Free golf, free golf, free golf.
I am, woohoo.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. He was in Air America Radio. Did I say that, my friends? I did. So, look, you guys, since our president is openly operating, before I get into him, I wanted to say that Kate Edwards, daughter of John Edwards, is going to be here with the son of Jay Rockefeller, Justin Rockefeller. Kate Edwards, who played us in softball on the Vanity Fair team last week, and apparently they won. Yes, they did, right? All right, so they won, but and she's a great catcher, would you say?
Yeah, she was really good.
Wow.
I was surprised. All right.
That's a whole other level of questioning we can take up with Kate Edwards other than engaging the youth vote. Since our president is openly operating at a different reality, in a different reality, we think it's important that Americans know what's happening in his alternate universe. Luckily, we have a staffer who lives in that world. So now here again is Planet Push Bureau Chief Lawton Smalls. Good morning, Lawton.
Hey, good morning, Mark. I'm a little disappointed you didn't watch more of the Jackson trial.
Are you still watching it?
Well, as much as I can. His acquittal was a great moment for white people everywhere. Finally, some justice for one of ours.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I hear what you're saying. You twisted weirdo. Lawton, I've got some poll I've got some poll numbers here. It's not looking good for your boy W.
He's America's boy, Mark. But, you know, go on. I get a kick out of your little liberal fairy tales.
The June survey from the Washington Post ABC poll found that 58% disapprove of the way Bush is handling both the economy and the situation in Iraq. Huh?
Oh, please continue, Stephen Hawking. Dazzle me with some more of your fancy numbers.
How about this,
Mr.
Smalls? When asked about their priorities and the president's priorities, 58% say Bush is concentrating mainly on things that are not important to them personally. Oh, yeah, that really sounds like a mandate to me, buddy.
He's got it and you don't. Deal with that.
Plus, the individual ratings of Bush are among the worst since he took office. How do you explain that, Lawton? Huh?
Well, same way I explain everything that comes out of your mouth, liberal bias, systematic brainwash by the gay agenda, and, if I may say, a large degree of inborn gullibility, Mark.
Bush is flopping big time, Lawton. Flopping in every category. Numbers don't lie, my friend.
Numbers don't lie. It's good to hear you say that, because I've got some poll numbers of my own to read to you. Okay? Do you think you can handle it?
I'll try, buddy.
All right. According to a recent poll, people who think George W. two terms mandate Bush belongs on Mount Rushmore. 100%.
Really? I had no idea.
There it is. People who think the invasion of Iraq was a greater victory than the Allied invasion of Normandy. 100%.
Wow.
Yeah, 100%.
D-Day, right? That was nothing.
Okay, people who feel better inside every time they see W's crooked little grin. 100%.
Whoa, wait.
100%.
You polled yourself, didn't you?
Yes, I did. And it's as every bit as solid as your so-called poll. I just asked myself, 100%.
What's wrong with polls?
Everything, Mark. Okay, say you're sitting there before your evening meal offering a prayer to ask Jesus for a new bath boat. And then the phone rings. Okay? Sorry, Jesus. I got to stop talking to you and go feed some liberal database so he can skew the numbers against the president you appointed with your own hand.
Wow.
Now, why should I feed that dog when it does nothing but bite me and leave stinky piles on my front porch?
Oh, my God.
Liberal bias. Be gone. Get out of my yard.
But you still pick up the phone?
Not anymore.
Uh-huh.
I just bought an answering machine, okay?
Yeah.
Hi, this is Lawton Smalls. God loves you. Please leave a message. Unless you're a pollster, then leave me your PIN number, your Social Security, and your mother's maiden name, because y'all owe me. Big time.
Okay.
I got money coming to me from you, boys.
I know why you don't like polls, man. I know why. It's because you can't control them.
Oh.
You neocons hate facts and free will. You can shout liberal bias about the polls all you want, but the people in this country are getting sick and tired, and it's coming out. Bush is sliding, Lawton, and it's only going to get worse, my friend. Oh, my God. What a child. The crying every time.
My pollsters are the only people who ever call me.
Oh, no.
I'm still alone in my tastefully furnished air conditioned home and just listen to the clock tick.
Oh, come on. Quit crying.
I'm so happy when a pollster calls. I stay on with them for an hour sometimes.
When
a telemarketer calls, I tell them to call back.
Oh, my
Anytime.
God.
Anytime. Just wake me up. Call me in the shower. I don't care. I'll be here. Why do you think I call you every week? Human contact, Mark.
Oh, my God.
Human contact from other people.
Okay, take it easy, man. Take it easy, please.
Well, Mark,
yeah.
If I gave you my number, could you call me once in a while?
I don't know, man.
You don't have to say anything. Just
a call. No, it feels weird.
Just hear sound from a person.
Oh, my God. All right, I guess. Okay, I'll call you, okay? I will. All right, stop crying, okay? Please.
Oh,
man.
Thank you. Where's Riley? What'd you do with him?
He's coming back tomorrow.
Okay.
Wow.
Oh,
my God. You all right?
People who think we should change the Constitution so President Bush could serve for life. 100%.
All right, I felt better. Goodbye, Lawton.
You should go to Disney World.
Goodbye, Lawton. Goodbye.
God loves you. Deal with it.
Oh, my God. Why do I fall for it every time? Why, that got a little tense there for a while, didn't it, Caleb? It felt a little more loaded than usual.
Yeah, a lot.
It did?
Yeah.
It wasn't just me. Did it feel angry? Didn't it feel like Lawton was angry?
There was a little something else there.
I felt that. I wonder what it was. Maybe he'll tell me later. I'm going to have to call him if he's so sad and find out exactly what was bothering him. This is a funny story that I didn't get into the other day. It's sort of been kicking around for a couple of days. But a protest organized June 1st by MoveOn.org drew about 20 people to the Michigan Avenue office of U.S. Representative Mike Rogers, a Republican in Brighton. Demonstrators protested Rogers' ties to Tom DeLay, but they had the wrong Mike Rogers. So you're protesting the wrong Mike Rogers. The Mike Rogers involved was not the Michigan congressman, but rather Representative Mike Rogers, a Republican of Alabama. Okay? And the Federal Election Commission's filing showed that Michigan's Rogers did receive $15,000 from DeLay's PAC, but not the $20,000 that the other Mike Rogers received. They just protested the wrong guy, but this is the hilarious thing about it, is at the end of it all, a spokesperson for MoveOn.org said that the discrepancy between the numbers didn't affect it, and that his opinion of the petition was okay because, hey, Tom DeLay is the core of it, he said, so I think it's a sound petition. Hey, what the hell? You know what I mean? Close enough. You know, the guy had the same name, and he's sort of guilty of the same stuff. Yeah, close enough. Yeah, I agree with him. Why not? I mean, you know, what are you going to do? Give up? Sometimes that happens. You get the wrong Mike Rogers. You get the wrong Mark Maron. The wrong Lawton Smalls. We're going to come back here with Kate Edwards and Justin Rockefeller, talk about the youth vote. And, of course, Michael Jackson. Right? Of course? Right? No. We're not going to talk about it. You're listening to Air America Radio. I'm Mark Maron. This is Morning Sedition. Riley will be back tomorrow, 27 past the hour.
Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
She makes points and stuff. She backs them up. What a... That's why I never listen to the Randy Rhoads Show on Air America Radio.
Hey. 34 past the hour, Mark Maron here. It's Morning's Edition on Air America Radio. Mark Riley will be back tomorrow. Don't freak out. Every election year, people talk about getting young people more involved in politics. Our next guests are starting a new organization that hopes to do just that. Kate Edwards is the daughter of former Democratic vice presidential candidate John Edwards. Justin Rockefeller is the son of West Virginia Democratic Senator Jay Rockefeller. They are both board members of the recently launched Generation Engage, and they join us in studio to tell us more about the organization and how they hope to get young people across the country invigorated by politics. Welcome, you guys.
Thanks. Glad to be
Thanks,
here.
Mark.
Yeah, I'm glad you're here. So tell me, what was the genesis of this operation? Who came up with it? What was the momentum that led to its inception? Justin?
Basically, we looked at the last election, and we saw that young people were detached from the political process.
Right.
They turned out in lower numbers than other age groups.
Right.
And we wanted to try to change that. And so we asked ourselves, how do we get young people involved in the process? And we looked at Ohio, really,
mm-hmm.
And we noticed that a bunch of kids from New York City basically went to Ohio, and they were armed with Palm Pilots, but Republicans had thousands of Ohioans talking to their neighbors, talking to their friends, talking to their family, and guess which process worked?
The Republicans.
Exactly. Oh. Politics is done at the grassroots level.
Right.
So we wanted to set up a system whereby we hire local standouts
okay.
to reach out to their peers and try to connect people at the local level.
What's a local standout?
Well, these are people who may have gone off to college
okay.
but returned to the place where they grew up.
Okay.
And they've been engaged civically
okay.
in some capacity.
This okay.
changes from person to person.
All right.
But they've distinguished themselves somehow in the local area. And we give them the resources they need.
Like what's that? Like a package of starter kit? Here you go. Here's the Democratic Party starter kit. Go, run.
Remember, not Democratic Party. This is totally nonpartisan.
Oh, sorry. Whoops. Okay.
Okay, I know that's a bad word here. But.
Oh, no. It's fine. And I think it's good that it's nonpartisan on some level. But what kind of things do you get people started with on a grassroots level to go out and do that stuff?
It literally changes from region to region.
Okay.
And that's why we're hiring the local standouts, because they know the local issues.
Okay.
And they know what works and how to connect people on the local level.
Okay, all
so
right.
So we're giving them the resources they need, meaning providing them with technology, computers, and forums, and bringing them national candidates and helping them connect with local candidates. And then ultimately those regional directors will connect young people with each other and with those candidates.
All right, so who are some of the people involved in this undertaking besides you two?
There are a lot of people. I mean,
yeah.
there are people on the ground,
okay.
Which I think are the most important people.
The standouts and whatnot?
The standouts, exactly.
Uh-huh.
And then this is starting, actually, the pilot programs are in North Carolina and Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're looping other people into the process, meaning people who live in those areas. In particular, we're targeting non-college youth.
Okay.
And
about half of the 18 to 24-year-olds out there have no college experience.
So you're
that's
looking for,
our target.
Okay, so you're looking for people with a lot of free time on their hands.
actually. I mean, I think they have less free time on their
uh-huh.
hands because they're working
trying to make
a living.
Yeah.
And because of that, I think that these issues are particularly
It's so weird. I just thought
them.
About me. You know, I just thought about me after college, just laying around like an idiot, wondering what I was going to do with my life. Sorry, I didn't mean to project that.
Hey, you've made it.
Yeah. Woo! I'm the host of a radio show. So let me, given that it's a bipartisan organization, how do you deal with organizing around an issue like Social Security, which are two, you know, people coming at it two extremely different ideological ways, or even reproductive freedom and those kind of issues?
Sure. Well, just to be clear, it's actually nonpartisan, not bipartisan.
Okay, that was my mistake. Nonpartisan.
Not at all. We want to be open to all ideas.
Mm-hmm.
But essentially, we're getting people interested in local issues.
Okay.
So it wouldn't immediately be Social Security. It's not
right.
going to be the big guns
right away.
Right. But getting people engaged at the local level gets them involved in the political process, and then they'll become lifelong responsible voters. Hence, this being independent of election cycles. But what's great is that if people are interested in Social Security, they can go to the regional directors, and those regional directors will connect them with top policy minds, with candidates who will address their questions, and they'll, you know, put them direct them towards the web.
Right. So these people, if they want to take it to the next level politically and start getting involved –
on specific issues. They will have the resources to get informed about those issues in a very efficient way and move on to the next step.
You got it.
Okay.
And, yes.
Oh, that's good. That's great. So now you both come from, you know major league political families. Now that must be, is it, you know, what is that like? I mean, you've lived around this stuff your entire life. Have you always been a political person, Kate?
Well, I actually have not. I mean,
no, because he was a lawyer before. Yeah.
Yeah, my dad ran for the first time when I was 16.
Mm-hmm.
In the past few months, yes, I've been very political because I've been campaigning with and for my dad for actually the last couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
Do
you ever argue with him about politics?
Oh, all the time.
Oh,
but
yeah.
But we won't get into that here, I guess.
We can.
Well, for another time.
Okay.
For another time.
All right.
But I mean, I think that that's part of the reason that we realize that we're lucky because we do understand the issues and we are brought up to feel like politics is important and to be civically engaged and our families have these discussions all the time, whereas a lot of people don't exactly have that entry into politics and into the political world and don't necessarily understand the importance of the issues. And I think that's exactly why we think that that we want to do this, why we think that it's important that we create a structure whereby most Americans and most young people can get engaged and can become interested and talk about the issues.
Mark, I'll speak for myself here, but
yeah, Justin,
I'm kind of a political junkie, and politics is really fun for me.
Yeah,
and hearing discussions around the family table growing up, I would hear my father describe how decisions made at the national level and at the statewide level had very tangible effects on people that he dealt with on a day-to-day basis. You know,
so let me just make
miners,
sure people, right, make sure people know who I'm talking to. I'm talking to Kate Edwards and Justin Rockefeller. Justin is the son of Senator Jay Rockefeller. Kate Edwards, the daughter of Senator John Edwards. You come from multi-generational governmental family. I mean, we're going back for what, three generations? So it's like you never was there ever a point where you went through a phase where you're like, I'm not doing it. No politics for me.
Absolutely. Of course.
That?
Once you see it close up, you have to you want to distance yourself, right?
Yeah,
But then I came around in the end because I saw that, you know, politics is relevant and it's fun and it should be fun and relevant for other young people.
Don't you think it's going to be an uphill struggle to get to kids? Because I know that I literally didn't become politically active to maybe, you know, like 2 weeks ago. And I know when I was younger that the last thing I really wanted to think about was politics. And there's a certain amount of apathy out there. I think young people get accused of apathy. But I also think there's a certain amount of paralysis that comes from feeling, you know, not able to get it all in your head or to change things. I think a lot of apathy is just, you know, fear and not knowing how to get involved. So how do you, I know that you're going to reach out to all these kids in terms of, and I don't want to call them kids, of these standouts, but don't you think it's going to be a tremendous struggle?
Of course it will. And it's a very expensive process.
Mm-hmm.
Grassroots politics is very expensive and it takes a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Hence, we're independent of election cycles. But maybe an example would help you understand sort of how this would work. We have things called hotspots.
Okay.
And these are places where young people are already going.
Oh, good.
Right?
Uh-huh.
These are the primarily the non-college 18 to 24-year-olds.
Sure. Okay.
And so if you have an event at a local library and invite people to come, you're preaching to the converted.
Right.
We're targeting those who aren't coming to these things.
How do you get someone excited about politics? Like, if you were talking to a guy, like, let's say I'm like an 18-year-old guy, and I'm like, I don't care, you know, it's stupid. What do you say?
Okay, well, the example I would use is one thing that we did in North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
We had an emergency room doctor
come
into a billiards hall, and he was talking about this chemical plant, which was nearby, and he saw an increase of asthma cases over the last 20 years. And then, we had talked to the manager beforehand. We said, we're bringing in some people. Raise the lights, lower the music for a few minutes, and let this emergency room doctor talk. People in the audience said, you know, wait, my sister has asthma. You're saying that could be related to this chemical plant. All of a sudden, the local politics became relevant to the people in that establishment.
Okay.
And so they followed up with email addresses, follow-up questions, they started to become involved.
That's
and
amazing.
It's not going to happen overnight.
Right.
But this is how we believe you do it.
If you can make them see how politics affects their immediate life, they will naturally want to get involved because they want to fight for what is right.
And if they become involved at the local level,
uh-huh.
Eventually that will drift into national politics.
Well, this sounds great. This sounds extremely encouraging. If you want to find out more about it, generationengage.org. My guests have been Kate Edwards, daughter of John Edwards, and Justin Rockefeller, son of Senator Jay Rockefeller. Do you guys have any political aspirations? You obviously do. It seems like you're gunning for something.
Well, I want to go to law school. If I run for office later, it'll be because I feel compelled to do it for some particular reason. But now I'm thinking just about law school and about Generation Engage.
Right on. Kate?
No. I don't think it's for me.
Just some softball in your future? I hear your team beat us.
Yeah, we did. We did. Although y'all put up a good fight.
Did we? I missed it. I got to go to one of
these. I totally missed that as well.
They're
I do
trying.
Want a rematch.
They got the shirts, though. That's a start, isn't it?
Shirts, absolutely.
Right?
And I still have my keychain from that game that I
used. Oh, good. Okay, well, I'm glad to hear that. Well, GenerationEngage.org, thank you for joining me, Kate and Justin. It was great talking to you. We'll check back in with you maybe in the future to see how this thing is moving forward. It's 45 past the hour. You're listening to Air America Radio. I'm Mark Maron. This is Morning Sedition.
Y'all ready for this?
Hi, this is Charles Barkley, and you're listening to Mark Maron and Mark Riley. Anything less would be uncivilized. It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
For this wonderful free tape, call 1-800-550-6146. That's 1-800-550-6146.
Fifty past the hour. Let's land this thing. I'm Mark Maron. Mark Riley will be back tomorrow. He's been on vacation.
Drip steam like a microphone fiend.
Ah, yes. I'm so glad we have Mark in spirit. He'll be back tomorrow from Disneyland, maybe with some stories. Disney World, I'm sorry. Don't want to plug it. Overplug it. You know, I get criticized. Hey, what do you got to give it all the free publicity? This is Morning's Edition. Did I mention
Mickey Mouse giving you money, man?
Yeah, man. Are you on the tip of Mickey Mouse, man? I'm looking forward to Mark coming back. I also would like to do this right now. We've got this new thing going. I want to take a minute and tell you about something that Air America is involved in. We're helping the Boys and Girls Club of America raise money for low-income Black and Latino kids from the Bronx, ages 6 to 12, to attend summer camp for a week. For the next 4 weeks, we're going to talk with experts, kids, and camp leaders about the challenges poor kids face in the city in summertime, such as crime, health risks, and a lack of safe, constructive, organized activities. We'll also talk about how camp can help give kids a boost in their lives by building self-esteem, teaching new skills, and exposing kids to new experiences. At the end of 4 weeks, we'll know just how many kids will get to have a potentially life-changing experience this summer. So you ask yourself, why are we doing this? Well, folks, because, you know, we want to walk the walk. We've been talking the talk for a year now. We'll demonstrate the difference between us and right-wing radio while they'll help Tom DeLay's Legal Defense Fund. We're working to make a real positive difference in kids' lives. This camp is operated by Bronx chapters of the Boys and Girls Club of America, serving areas that have the city's highest rates of teen pregnancy and HIV, and in which the leading cause of death for minors is homicide. The average gross income of families served is $14,000. The camp is located on a lakefront in Harriman State Park, 40 miles north of New York City. Activities include swimming, fishing, hiking, boating, arts and crafts, reading, writing, gardening, computer training, and the performing arts. I want to go. Can I go to camp? Can I? Go to airamericaradio.com and click on the Camp Air America link. Then you can make your tax-deductible donation online or by phone. $35 sponsors a morning hike for 15 kids. $35. $75 sponsors an afternoon of camp activities for 30 kids. $350 sponsors 1 week at camp for a child. Okay, and then if you want, you can drop us an email at sedition@airamericaradio.com to let us know how much you donated and why. Maybe share a camp story. Kayo, did you ever go to camp? Did you?
Of course.
You did? Like, what was your camp like? Where did you go?
I went to sleepaway camp with the Boy Scouts.
Sleepaway camp for how long?
I believe one whole month.
Mm-hmm.
It was great. We had such a great time. I learned so many different things. How to not get a beating.
Yeah.
You know, when they were coming around to to initiate everyone with a soap in a sock.
Yeah.
And, you know, other things. I mean,
that's important stuff to take care of, to take through life.
I shot a rifle. You know, I went swimming. It was great. I made some good friends during camp.
I went to a brush ranch that was in the Pecos up north in northern New Mexico. I went there for a couple of years.
Wow, that's pretty damn cool.
You know what I did there? That you will never guess what I learned how to do at camp that changed my life in so many ways and that I still do now. Tie flies. You ever done fly tying where you just put a fish hook on a clamp and you make little fishing lures, you know, fly for fly fishing?
Really? You did that at camp?
Sure, yeah.
Can you make me one?
Sure, man. I'll get right on that. I'm going to go home. I got my fly tying kit. And I think there's another name for it, actually. It was so funny because they had this pond that they used to stock with trout. They'd fill the pond with trout. And you'd go out there and go fishing. Yeah, but you could feed the fish, so we'd all take these handfuls of fish food and just throw it out there and just plop our fly in the middle of the fish food and catch a fish.
They're literally just giving you the fish. And what do
We're
you
kids.
Do?
What do you want? You want to feel that self-esteem of reeling one in? Huh? You want to know how that feels? We did some shooting up there, too. Shot some 22s and some shotguns.
Really? Were you any good?
No, I could shoot a 22, okay, but I could never hit a skeet. I could just never hit the flying clay pigeon.
Oh,
you know where you go, pull! And they threw a little yarmulke-shaped clay pigeon
really
out into
it. You did
that
at camp? That's so cool.
Yeah, I did it at that camp. And then there was another camp where I was sent to learn how to play tennis. So it's really different. You know what I mean? One was sort of a cowboy camp. Actually, up there at Brush Ranch, you had to have cowboy boots and a cowboy hat to go.
Well, what if you didn't
Can
have
you see me?
Hat?
Look at me. Chubby Mark Maron. Here you go. Here's your hat and your boots. Go have a good time. This is the assigned horse you have. The horse they assigned me, man, I'm scared of horses now. When I was 13 or 14, petrified. And they gave me this bitter old female horse. I think her name was Mama or something. And we had to learn how to saddle the horses up, which is really practical for a Jewish kid from New Mexico, to learn how to saddle a horse up and wear my hat. And every time I put a saddle on this horse and start to tie the thing through the hoop at the bottom, the thing would reach around and bite my side. The horse would bite my side.
So Marshmallow Marin always had a problem with the women.
Dude, the women? I'm not even getting into the sex with the horse part. All right. That was... All right, anyways. You just sent me... I had to go there. Anyways, for those of you who are just tuning in, here are a few highlights of what we talked about on the program. It's time for today's Morning Sedition Cliff Notes. Nevada Governor Kenny Gwynn will veto a ban on strip club bounties for cab drivers. The governor said outside of the billboard ads, flyers, and commercials for strip clubs, how would tourists ever find them if a cab driver didn't suggest one? The governor said vetoing this bill would give this whole subject a happy ending. Come on, a happy ending.
Yeah, I'm all about that.
All right, the Northeast Red Tide outbreak has affected thousands of square miles. What's it all about, algae? Nothing? Come on, they love that one up in Beantown, people. Come on, I'll be here all week. You're beautiful. Don't try to lobster. All right, red tide in New England, then we should send a blue tide to Texas and wipe out the livelihood of those Republican bastards. Who's with me? Come on, what do I got? Momentum? Christina Aguilera music was used for torture at Gitmo. Listening to Christina Aguilera finally got one of the prisoners to talk, but all he could talk about was how much better she was than Britney Spears. Okay. A local New York radio station recently played a 12-hour Christina Aguilera marathon. By the end of the day, 200 cab drivers had turned themselves in. Hello. Hello. Hey.
I was bracing for
that one. I know. Today's phrase, just dropping into conversation, playing Christina Aguilera music is a form of torture. Amnesty International should investigate the Banana Republic store in my neighborhood. Wake up, sheeple. They're trying to break me so I would pay $80 for a T-shirt. All right. Those are your Morning Sedition Cliff Notes. Mark Riley is going to be back tomorrow. Tomorrow on the show, we've got Nora Ephron to talk about Bewitched and hopefully some other stuff, maybe being married to Carl Bernstein. Plus, we're going to talk to Future Mark. And as I said, Riley's back. Thanks, everybody. Talk to you tomorrow. It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.